Dead Sea Lee, a forecastle yarn by T.E. Brown, told by Dolan Kelly, with music by Stephen Dallimore.
Said I would. Well, I hardly know. But a yarn's a yarn, so here we go. It's along o' me and a lawyer's clerk. You've seen mayhap that sort of a spark, as neat and as pert and as sharp as a pin, with a muscle of hair on the tip of his chin, with his face so fine and his tongue so glib, and a saucy cock in the set of his jib, with his rings and his studs and all the rest, and half a chain cable paid out on his breast. Now there's different divils ashore and at sea, and a divil's a divil wherever he be. But if you want the real old mark, the divil of divils is the lawyer's clerk. Well, out it must come, though it be with a wrench, and I must tell you about a wench that I was a courtin' of. Yes, me, I, and her name, it was Betsy Lee. Now, most of you lads has had a spell of courting and that, and it's hard to tell how ever a youngster comes to fancy that of all the girls it's Ginny or Nancy or Mary or Betsy that must be his'n. I don't know how it is or it isn't, but some time or other it comes to us all, just like a clapper shoot or a squall or a snake or a viper or some such dirt creeping under your shirt and sliding and slipping right into your brace and making you as you can't get rest. And it works and it works till you feel your heart rising. God knows what it is, if it isn't pison. You see, we're a roughish set of chaps that's brought up rough on our mammy's laps, and we grow and we run about shouting and fooling till we gets to be lumps and fit for the school, and then we gets to know the marks and the signs, and we leaves the school, and we sticks to the lines, baiting and setting and hauling and that, till we know every fish from a whale to a sprat, and we gets big and strong, for it do make you stronger to row a big boat or to pull at a conger. Then what with a cobbling up of the yawl, and a patching and mending the nets for the trawl, and a rising early and going to bed late, and a dreaming of scallops as big as a plate, and the hooks and the creels and the oars and the gut, you'd say there's no room for a little slut, but howsomedoever, it's not the case, and a pretty face is a pretty face, and through the whole coil as bright as a star, a girl slips in, and there you are. Well, that was just the way with me. And the girl I'm speaking of, Betsy Lee. Ah, mates, it's wonderful too. The years, you may live dead on end with your eyes and your ears right alongside of the lass that's going to be your sweetheart, and you never knowin'. That's the way. For her father and mine was neighbours, and both in the fisherman line, and their cottages stood on the open beach, with a nice bit of garden back of them each. You know the way them houses is fixed, with the pigs and the hens and the children mixed, and the mothers go round when the nights begin and whips up their own, and takes them in. Her father was terrible fond of flowers, and his garden was twice as handsome as ours. A mortal keen eye he had for the varmin, and his talk was always of plantin' and farmin'. He had roses hangin' above his door, uncommon fine roses, they was to be sure, and the joy o' my heart was to pull them there, and break them in pieces on Betsy's hair. Not that Betsy was much of a size, at the time I mean, but she had big eyes, so big and so blue and so far asunder, and she looked so solemn. I used to wonder, That was all, just baby play, knocking about the boats all day, and sometimes a lot of us taking hands and racing like mad things over the sands. Ah, it wouldn't be bad for some of us if we'd never gone further and never fared worse. If we'd never grown up and never got big, if we'd never took the brandy swig, if we were skipping and scampering and capering still on the sand that lies below the hill, crunching its grey ribs with the beat of our little pattering naked feet, if we'd just kept childer upon the shore forever and evermore. Now the beauty of the thing when childer plays is the terrible, wonderful length of days is. Up you jumps and out in the sun, and you fancy the day will never be done. And you're chasing the bumbies, humming so cross in the hot, sweet air among the goss. Or gathering bluebells, or looking for eggs, or pelting the ducks with their yellow legs, or a-climbing and nearly breaking your skulls, or a-shouting for devilment after the gulls, or a-thinking of nothing but down at the tide singing out, father happy, you feel inside. That's the way with the kids, you know, and the years do come, and the years do go. And when you look back, it's all like a puff, happy, and over, and short enough. Well, I never took notions on Betsy Lee, no more did she, I suppose, on me. Till one day, digging upon the sand, Gibbons, of course, you'll understand, a lad that was always a cheeky young sprout began a-pulling a Betsy about, and he worried the wench till her shoulders were bare, and he slipped the knot of her beautiful hair, and down it come, as you may say, just like a shower of golden spray, blown this way and that by a gamesome breeze, and a rip-rip rippling down to her knees. I looked at Betsy. Oh, dear, how she stood a-quivering all over, and her face like blood, and her eyes all wet with tears like fire, and her breast a-swelling higher and higher, and she gripped her sickle with a twitchy feel, and her thumb darted out like a coil of steel, and a cloud seemed to pass from my eyes, and a glory like them you'll see painted sometimes in a story breathed out from her skin. And I saw her no more, the child I had always thought her before, but wrapped in the glory and wrapped in the hair, every inch of a woman stood panting there. So I ups with me fist as I was bound, and one for his knob, and knocks him down. But from that day, by land and sea, I loved her. Oh, I loved her, my Betsy Lee. It's a terrible thing, is love, did you say? Well, Edward, me lad, I'll not say nay. But you don't think of that when the young heart blows, leaf by leaf, coming out like a rose, and your sheets is slacked off, and your blood is a-prancing, and the world seems a-flower for you to dance on. Terrible, eh? Yes, yes, you're right. But all the same, it's God's own light. Ah, there was something worth loving in her, as neat as a bird and as straight as a fir, and I've heard them say when she passed by it was like another sun slipped into the sky, kind to the old and kind to the young, with a smile on her lip and a laugh on her tongue, with a heart to feel and a head to choose, and she stood just 5'4" in her shoes. Oh, I've seen her look. Well, well, I'll stop it. Oh, I've seen her turn. Well, well, then, drop it. Seen, what? All under the sod, the darling lies now. My God. My God. All right, me lads, I shipped that sea. I couldn't help it. Let be. Ah, them curtain times. Well, it's no use trying to tell what they were, and time is flying, but you know how it is. The father pretending he never sees nothing, and the mother mending or a-gripping the Bible and a-spelling a text and a-eyeing us now and then over her specs. Oh, they were a decent enough pair, them two. If it was only with them I'd had to do. Bless me, the land that he was in the flowers, and how he would talk for hours and hours about digging and dunging and weeding and seeding, and sometimes a bit of a spell at the reading, and Betsy and me sitting back in the chimney, and her a-clicking her needle so nimbly, and me looking straight in Owl Anthony's face, and a-stealing me arm round Betsy's waist. Oh, the shy she was. But when Anthony said, "Now, childer, it's time to be going to bed," then Betsy would say, as we all of us riz, I wonder what sort of a night it is, or, "Never mind, father, I'll shut the door." And shut it she did, you may be sure, only the way she'd done it, you see, I was outside. But so was she. Ah, then was the time, just a minute. A minute, but bless me, the sight of love we put in it. Ah, the clasping arms. Ah, the stooping head. Ah, the kisses and showers. Ah, the things that we said. Yes, yes, and the crying when I went. Oh, the innocent. The innocent. Now listen, me lads, and I'll give you the cut of what I calls a innocent foot. For it's no use the whole world talking to me if I'd never seen nothing of Betsy Lee except her foot. I was bound to know that she was as pure as the driven snow. For there's feet that howls on like a cat on a roof, and there's feet that thumps like an elephant's hoof. There's feet that goes trundling on like a barra, and some that's crooky, some as straight as an arrow. There's feet that's thick, and feet that's thin, and some turning out, and some turning in, and there's feet that can run, and feet that can walk, aye, feet that can laugh, and feet that can talk, but an innocent foot, it's got the spring that you feel when you tread on the mountainling, and it's tied to the heart, and not to the hip, and it moves with the eye, and it moves with the lip. I suppose it's God that makes when he wills them beautiful things, with the lift of his hills, and the waft of his winds, and his calms, and his storms, and his work, and his rest. That's how he forms a simple wench to be true and free, and to move like a piece of poetry. Well, a lass is a lass, and a lad is a lad. But now for the luck Owl Anthony had. For one evening, as I was making the beach, I heard such a hullabaloo and a screech that I left the boat there, as she was, and I ran straight up to the houses and saw the whole clan of neighbours a-crowding at Anthony's door, for most of the boats was landed before, and some pressing in and some pressing out. So I asked the woman what it was all about. "And didn't you hear the news?" says she. "It's a fortin that's come to old Anthony Lee." Then she told me about the lawyer chap that was in with them there, and his horse, and his trap, and his papers, with seals as big as a skate. Bless me, how them women loves to prate. "And a good-looking man he was," she said, "as you might see, and a gentleman bred, and he's talking that nice, and that kind, and that free, and it's a fortune he's got for our Anthony Lee." So I said, "All right," but I felt all wrong, and I turned away, and I walked along to a part of the shore where the wreck of a mast stuck half of it out and half of it fast, and a knife inside of me seemed to cut me heart from its moorings, and heaven shut and locked and barred like the door of a dungeon, and me in the trough of the sea a-plunging with the only land that I knew behind me, and a-drifting where God himself couldn't find me. So I made for the mast. But before I got at it, I saw Betsy a-standing, as straight as a statue, with her back to the mast and her face to the water, and the strain of her eyes getting tauter and tauter, as if with the strength of her look she'd try to draw a soul from the dull, dead sky. Then I went to her. But what could I say? For she never took her eyes away. Only she put her hand on my cheek, and I tried, and I tried hard enough to speak, but I couldn't. Then, All of a sudden she turned, and the far-off look was gone, and she yearned to my heart, and she said, "You doubted me." And I said, "I didn't then, Betsy Lee." So her and me sat down on the mast, and we talked and talked, and the time went fast, when I heard a step close by, and beholdy, there was the lawyer chap, I told ye, had come with the papers, confound the pup. And says he, "I'm sorry to interrupt," he says, "such a pleasant tete-a-tete, but you'll pardon me, it's getting late, and I couldn't think of returning to town without paying me respects, as I feel bound, to the lovely heiress, and offering her, and cetera, you know how they rattles on." So we rose, and all the three of us homeward goes. But blessed if he didn't buck up, and says he with a smirk, "Will you take my arm, Miss Lee?" And Betsy didn't know what to do, so she catched a howl. And there them two goes linking along, or I thought I'd split with laughing, and then I cussed a bit. And when we come up to the houses, the rushing there was to the doors, and Betsy blushing, and him looking grand, and me looking queer, and the women saying, "What a beautiful pair." Now it mattered little to me that night what stuff they talked, for I knew I was right with Betsy, but still, you see, of a rule, a fella doesn't like to look like a fool, and the more I thought of the chap and his bowing, the madder I got. So when he was going, and I held the horse and give him the reins, "And there's a sixpence," says he, "for your pains, a sixpence, my man." I couldn't howl in, and once I began, I did begin, and I let him have it hot, as they say. But he only laughed and drove away. Now heave ahead, me lads, with me, for the weeks rolled on, and old Anthony Lee did just what he always wanted to do. For he took a farm they called the Brew, in a holler that lay at the foot of a hill, where the blessed old crater might have his fill of stocking and rearing and grassing and tillage, and only about a mile from the village, and a stream ran right through the orchard, and then went dancing and glancing down the glen, and soaked through the shilly and out to the bay, but never forgot, as it passed, to say with the ringing laugh of its silvery flow, "She's thinking of you, and she told me so." "Laugh on, me hearties, you'll do no harm. But I've stood when the wind blew straight from the farm, and I felt her spirit draw nigher and nigher, till it shivered into me veins like fire, and every ripple and every rock seemed swept with the hem of Betsy's frock. But, of course, our little Sim, is he off? Little lad, just fist us the glim." Ah, beauty, beauty. No matter for him, no matter for him. Ah, isn't he good? With his nose like a shell and his mouth like a bud, there's sauce enough in that dear lip to aggravate ever a man in the ship. Did you hear him today, a gate of his chaff? Well, how we made the skipper laugh. Just come here and look at him, mates. Isn't he like them things up the streets, them pictures the Romans has got in their chapels? Brave little chaps, with their cheeks like apples, holding on to their mother's petticoats and looking as pert and as bold as goats. Bless me, the body them craters has got, clean, without a speck or a spot, and they calls the little boy Jesus, and her, with her head wrapped up in a handkercher, they calls the Virgin. And all them starts and pattering, nostering, and bless their hearts. What's he dreaming of now, little lad? Brother and sister and mother and dad, and lobsters are creeping about the creel, and granny humming her spinny wheel, or him in the parlour a lying in bed, and a twigging the spiders overhead. Hushy bow baby upon the treetop, and when the wind blows, the cradle will rock. Ah, Simmy, me boy, I've done me best. Aye, something like that. But as for the rest, go on, go on, is that your shout? Well, what is this I was thinking about? I'm in for it now, and it's no use bilking. Oh, aye, the milking. Old Anthony's milking. I never thought on for the wise or the house, but I was always terrible fond of cows. Now, aren't they innocent things, them bases? And haven't they got owl innocent faces, a strugging their legs that lazy way, or a standing as if they meant to pray? They're that solemn, and loving, and study, and wise, and the butter melting in their big eyes. Eh? What do you think about it, John? Is it the stuff they are feeding on, the clover and meadow grass and rushes and them going picking among the bushes and sniffing the dew when it's fresh and fine, the sweetest brew of God's own wine? And the smell of the herbs gets into their souls and works and rowls till it tightens their tits and drabs their muzzle. Well, it's no use of talking, it's a regular puzzle, but you'll notice the very people that's got to attend to the lick is generally very easy men. Our owl Anthony knew about them, Pat. Alderney, Ayrshire and all to that, and breeding and rearing and profit and loss. Oh, he was a clever old chap, owl Anthony was. More by token, that's the four, him and me had our first war. You see, I was sitting there one night when who should come in but owl Tommy Tite. Tight he was by name and nature, a dirty old hypocrite of a crater, with a mouth that shut with a snick and a snap, tight for sure, like the devil's own trap, and his hair brushed up behind and before straight, like the bristles the son of Boa. Well, that man was thin. I never saw thinner. A lean, old, hungry, mangy sinner. And he'd sit and he'd talk. Well, away he'd talk, and he'd groan in his innards, but an eye like a hawk, and cunning, written all over his face. And wasn't it him that owned the place? Well, there they were talking and talking away about carrots and turmits and oats and hay and stock and lock and barrel. Bless ye, the big words they had was enough to distress ye, with their pipes in each other's faces smoking, and me looking and longing and looking, looking for Betsy's little signs. The way them pretty craters finds to talk without talking is really grand. A tap of the foot, a twitch of the hand, a heise of the neck, a heave of the breast, a stoop like a bird upon its nest. A look at father, a look at mother, a one knee swinging over the other, a looking lower and a looking higher, a long, long straight look into the fire, a look of joy and a look of pain, but bless you, ye understand what I mean. So on they talked till all the fun in a darling little face begun to work, and I couldn't howl it in, and I laughed like anything. My goodness, the mad owl Anthony got, with his eyes so wide and his cheeks as hot and as red as a coal, and the other fellow was turning green and turning yellow, and the owl woman bucked up as proud as you please. But owl Anthony spoke, and says he says, "It's most unfortunate. I hope you will. I mean, it's most disrespectable, but I hopes, Mr. Tite, as you'll excuse." And so he went on with his parley-boos. "Just a young man from the shore," says he, "as drops in the evening for company, a humble neighbour, as don't know better. You see, Mr. Tite, I knew his father." Well, I choked that down, but I says to myself, pretended to stare at the plates on the shelf, "You've got me, old man. But I'll owe you one for that before the stakes is drawn." But it's my belief that from that day he never liked me anyway. But about the milking. All right, I'm nearly as bad as old Tommy Tite, spinning round and round and round and never a-knowing, queer am I bound. Well, mostly every evening, you see, I was up at the milking with Betsy Lee. For when she was milking, she was always singing. I don't know what was it. Maybe the ringing of the milk coming tearing into the can with a swish and a swelch and a tantaran and making what the lawyer gent was calling a sort of accompaniment. But the look of a cow is enough to do it, And her breath and her neck, the way she'll slew it as if she was saying, the patience she stood, milk away, it's doing me good. And the sun going down, and the moon coming up, and maybe you taking a little sup, and the steam of the hay, and your forehead pressing again her round side. But for all, it's a blessing when they are nice and quiet, for there's some of them rough, and kicky, and pushy, and bowel enough. Now Betsy would sing, and I would hear, and away I'd be like a hound or a deer, up the glen and through the sedges, and bless me, the way I took the hedges, for I'd be wanting to get in time to the place to see the last sunlight on Betsy's face. And when I'd be getting atop of the brew, where Earl Anthony's house was full in view, then I'd stop and listen till I'd got it right, and answer it back with all me might. And when I come down, she'd say, I heard you're for all the world like a mockingbird. She had her fun, oh, she had her fun. And I'd say, well, Betsy, are you nearly done? And I'd kiss her. And then she'd say, what bother? And the cow looking round like a kind old mother. One cow they had, well, of all the sense that ever I saw, and the impudence, God bless me, the lick of yonder old Mealy, a brown cow she was, well, really, really, she's made me laugh till I absolute shouted, pretending to know all about it. Well, one evening, I'd been laughing like a fool, and Betsy nearly fallen off the stool in the orchard, and the apple blossoms there was shredding down on Betsy's hair, and I was picking them off, do you see, and the cow was looking and smiling at me when creak went the gate. And who should appear but Mr. Richard Taylor Esquire, that's the lawyer chap, and says he, pleasantly engaged, Miss Lee. So Betsy was all of a twitter lick, and she catched her handkerchief round her neck and straightened her hair and smoothed her brat and says, good evening, just like that. Well, I hardly knew what to do or to say, so I just sat down and milked away. But Betsy stood up to him like a man. Goodness, how that girl's tongue ran, like the tick of a watch or the buzz of a reel, and hoity-toity and quite genteel, rattle-rattle the talk it came, and as grand the two of them, or I might have been 1,000 miles away. Of course, I know what you'll say, but I couldn't stand it. So I watched me chance, and I turned the tit, and I gave it him once, a right good scoot betwixt the eyes. Oh, murder, murder, what a rise! With the milk all streaming down his breast, and his shirt, and his pins, and all the rest, and a brand new waistcoat spoiled, and him spluttering, and a wipe in his face, and muttering, muttering, and at last he says, I shall go, says he, and communicate this to Mr. Lee. Oh, Tom, says Betsy. Oh, Betsy, says I, whatever, says she, and she begun to cry. Well, I says, it's no wonder of me, with your rancy-tancy tizzamity. But we soon made it up, and it was getting late, and again I heard the garden gate. There, says I, he's gone, so now, little missus. And kisses, 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 kisses. Take care, says she. Never fear, I said. Yes, a fool, an old fool, but she loved me, Ned. So I cleared the fence and the stream and the pebbles chiming all night with their little trebles and tenors and basses down at the fall answering back with a kindly call. She used to tell me it sent her to sleep just at the dam. It was middling deep. And I crossed the glen and I took a short cut and all at once I heard a foot. I guessed it was him and I was right with his boots going winking through the night. Good night, says I. Good night, says he. And what did you tell old Anthony Lee? Oh, then he begun. And he cussed and he swore the divil behind and the divil before and all what he'd do and he'd have the law. And if it hadn't been, calm, stop that jaw. Have it out, Mr. Taylor, says I. Here we are under God's own sky. Have it out like a man if it's a man you are. Have it out, my lad, if you dare and don't stand there like a blue baboon with your long teeth chattering in the moon. Not if I knows it, says he. Tom Baines. No, no, says he. I've other means. Have you? Says I, and I grips him straight and sends him flying over a gate and gives a look and nothing stirred. But he kept his word. He kept his word.
This was in spring, and the summer come, and be how ye, me gentleman still was dumb, for he maybe thought about that spree, the less said the better for he, for he's one of them chaps that works in the dark, and creeps and crawls as a lawyer's clerk, and digs and a digs, and gives no sign, spreading sods and flowers at the mouth of his mine, and he'll lay his train, and he'll howl his match, and he'll wait, and he'll wait, and he'll watch, and he'll watch till the minute comes, and before you sneezes, you're up to heaven in 100 pieces. Oh, it's a bitter poison, that blackguard, the lie that eats into your heart, a thing gathering round you like a seine round the fish, and them never feeling the strain, a squall coming tippy-toe off the land, and howling its breath till it's close at hand, and whispering to the winds to keep still till all is ready. And then with a will, with a rush and a roar, they sweeps your deck, and there you lies, a shivering wreck. Well, winter come, and then the cows was going a-milking in the house. And if you want peace and quietness, it's in a cowhouse you'll get it the best. For the place is so warm, and their breath is so sweet, and the nice straw bedding about their feet, and hardly any light at all, but just a dip stuck onto the wall, and them yocked in the dark as quiet as ghosts, and a feeling for each other's noses. And bless me, sometimes you'd hardly be knowing it was them, except for their chewing and blowing. Oh, many a time I felt quite queer to see them standing so orderly there. Is it the Lord that makes them so still? Oh, I like them craters terrible. Aye, aye, the sea for the likes of us, it's God's own work, though treacherous. But for peace and rest and that, do you see? Among the cows is the place for me. And Betsy speaking, so soft and low, or speaking nothing at all, you know, or singing hymns no matter what, gentle Jesus and the like of that. And that's the way she was one night, pressed to my heart as tight. Sing glory be, the darling said, and then it'll be time to be going to bed. When all of a sudden at the door come a clattering of clogs, and there for sure stood Paggy, the servant, all out of breath. And you're wanted, says she, Miss Elizabeth. So I got up and I was going to. Oh, no, says Peggy, that'll never do. And she went. And she went. And me heart gave a shiver. And I never saw her again. No, never. Never.
Well, well. Well, well, what ails the ship? Howl on, howl on. I've got a grip. Who's at the helm? Is it you and Cronin with all this criss-crossing and herring-boning? My patience. Or is it Tommy Tier? That's a terrible uneasy fella to steer. Have another pipe? Why, thank you, Edit. You're a feeling lad, and I always said it. Yes, give me the can. I'll just take a swipe. Aye, another pipe. Another pipe. And Edit, me lad. Was that a letter you got from home? Is your father better? Is your mother hearty? I knew her well, a nice little stugger of a girl. And Edit, whenever you'll be going to write, tell him I was axing. I've got a light. How are they? And Edit, mind you'll put in if old Tommy Tight's looking after the tin, and if the herons was plenty this year. And is the geary drain, do you hear? And how old Higgison rose the rent. Oh, Edit and me is well acquent. Well, well, I didn't know what was up, nor whether to go, nor whether to stop. So I waited a bit, and I took off me shoes, and thinks I, the old people's gone to roost, and maybe she's waiting all alone, and wondering, am I gone? And I looked, and I looked, and I cried.
across the street as quiet as a mouse in me stocking feet, and I crept in among the honeysuckles at the porch, and I gave a tap with me knuckles, just this way, when the door gave a flirt, and there stood Owl Anthony in his shirt, hard and keen, and his owl bald head like Sam'l, when he was riz from the dead in the Bible, you know. Yes, just the same. Isaac and Peter and the lack of them that's always got conks like turkey's eggs, and the wind blowing free round the blessed owl's legs, enough to fricken you in the night. He was so awful, and big, and white. And says he, I thought it was you that was ducking. Oh, it's very shocking, it's very shocking. What's shocking? I says. Oh, he says, it's no use pretending, young man. Well, why the deuce, says I, can't you give the thing a name? Oh, really, says he, for shame, for shame. And it's cowled, he says, and I think I'll go in. Oh, it's an awful sin. Sin, says I. Well, whatever it is, who told you this? Who told you this? Mr. Taylor, he says. Mr. Taylor, says I. Oh, indeed. Then he tell me the why and all about it, how Jenny McGee had come home and laid a child to me. And nice proceedings, he said, indeed. And who was I and the beggarly breed the lot of us was? And how dare I, says he, how dare I look up to Betsy Lee? Is he here, I says? No, no, that's well, thank God, for by heaven and hell, if I had caught him in the wood, the sun would have risen upon his blood. Oh, says he, quite frickened like, what shocking feelings, and could I expect, and did I really mean? And before I could say this or that, he was in, and turned the key. Oh, up to that I was proud enough, bowel as a lion and middling rough, but left there alone, that sore distressed, all the strength of the night come upon me and pressed and forced me down till I fell on my knees, and I heard the moan of the long dead seas far away rolling in on the shore, and I called to Owl Anthony through the door, oh, listen to me, oh, listen to me, oh, Mr. Lee, oh, Mr. Lee, he's bought that woman, I said, he's bought her, to swear that lion, it's after your daughter he is himself, oh, listen to me, oh, Mr. Lee, oh, Mr. Lee. Not a word. Not a word. It's a lie, I cried. It's a lie if on the spot I died. It is, sir. It is a lie. Never a word or sound of reply. Oh, Mr. Lee, I says, can I see her? Oh, Mistress Lee, are you up there? Let me see Betsy. She'll believe me. Let me see Betsy. Save me. Save me. She hears me now when her heart is broke, I said. And I listened. But no one spoke. She's dying. You're stopping her mouth, I said. You're howling her down upon the bed. Oh, you'll answer for this at the day of doom. You're smothering her there in the little room. Betsy, Betsy, my darling love. Betsy, Betsy, oh, Father above. And then I fell right for it and lay quite stupid. How long, I cannot say. But the first thing I felt when I tried to stand was something soft a-slickin' me hand. And what do you think it was but Sweep, the old black collie that minded the sheep? God bless you, says I, I've a friend in you, and he was a middling sulky creature too. So I dragged myself up and picked a bit of the honeysuckle and buried it in me breast. And I wandered round and round, but not a muscle of light could be found. I was like a drunken man the way I staggered and across the street and through the haggard and into the fields, and I know nothing more till they found me in the morning upon the shore. Well, he was a villain anyway. He was a villain, did you say? A villain? Will you cuss him, Bill? Aye, cuss you, Phil, boy, cuss you, Phil. A villain, eh? But before I'm done, you'll know something more about him, my son. Now, men, what was I to do? Can you tell? Just leave it alone. Aye, maybe as well. But I never would strike my flag to a lie before I knew good reason why. No, no, my lads, it's not in my blood. I never did, and I never would. Well, I thought, and I thought, till at last a plan come into me head, and that's the man, I says, the parson. I'll go to him, and I'll know the worst of it, sink or swim. So I cleaned myself, and I had a draw of the pipe, and I went, but middling slow, for me head was working uncommon hard all the way, and I didn't regard for nothing at all, and the boats coming round the stack a beating up for the ground, and a rantypike schooner caught in the tide, and a nice little wholesale breeze outside. Not much matter to me, I'd speck. No. But you'll always be noticing, like. Now the grandest owl parson, I'll be bail, that ever was Owl Parson Gale. Oh, of all the kind and the good and the true and the easy and free, and how do you do, and how's your mother, Tom, and the fishing, speaking that nice, and always wishing good luck to the boats, and how's the take, and blessing us there for Jesus' sake. And many a time he'd come out and try a line, and the keen he was, and the spry, and he'd sit in the stern, and he'd tuck his tails, and well he knew how to handle the sails, and sometimes, if we were smoking, he'd ax for a pipe, and then we'd be turning our backs, letting none never to see him, and looking this way and that way, and him a-smoking twists as strong and as black as tar, and terrible solemn and regular. Bless me, the spirit that was in him too, howling on till all was blue, and only a little man, but staunch, with a mean big heart aback of his paunch, just a little round man. But you should have seen him a gait of a good-sized conga or a skate, his arms are stiff, and his eye a fire, and every muscle of him like wire. But avast this talk. What? What did you say? Tell us more. About the parson, eh? Well, he was a parson, yes. But there's odds of parsons, that's the way it is. For there's parsons now that's mortal proud, and some middling humble, that's allowed. And there's parsons particular about their clothes, and rings on their fingers, and bells on their toes. And there's parsons that doesn't know your names. Shut the gate, my man. And all them games. And there's parsons too free. I've heard one cuss as hard and as hearty as one of us, but Parson Gale, now I'll give you his size. He was a simple parson, and loving and wise, that's what he was, and quiet uncommon, and never said much to man nor woman, only the little he said was meat for a hungry heart, and soft and sweet the way he said it, and often talking to hisself, and looking down, and walking. Quiet he was, but you couldn't doubt the parson was knowing what was he about. Aye, many a time I've seen his face all slushed with tears, and him telling of grace and mercy and that, and his voice so low, but trembling. Oh, we liked him, though. And he wasn't living above the bay where I was living, but a bit away, over the next, and betwixt the two, the land ran out to a point, and a screw of the tide set in on the rocks, and there he'd stand in the morning and listen to hear the dip of our oars coming out. And the jealous we were of the Derby Haven fellas, and the way we'd pull to try which would be first. And Parson, we'd say, are you coming with us? And the Derby Haven chaps would call, and the way he'd smile and say nothing at all. Well, that's the parson, you'll understand. Aye, the very man, the very man. Oh, if I once get a gait of him. But some night again, if I'll be in the trim, I'll maybe be telling you more, if so be. You'll be caring to listen, and all agree. Well, the parson was walking on the gravel. My conscience, the slow that man did travel. Backwards and forwards, and stopping and thinking, and a-talking away to hisself like winking, and a-picking a flower, or a-kicking a stone. There he was anyway, all alone, and I felt like a regular blundering blocket, and I stowed the quid in my waistcoat pocket, and I said, "Here goes, I don't give a farden." And I opened the gate and into the garden, and, "Parson," I says, "I've come to you." "Is it true, Tom Beans?" he says. "Is it true?" And he looked. "No, it isn't," I said, quite pale. "So you needn't look that way, Parson Gale. It isn't true." So the old man smiled, and says he, "Well, don't be angry, child." "Child," he called me. "Do you see? Do you see? Child." And he takes my hand, and says he, "I suppose you've got a yarn to spin. Come in, Tom Beans. Come in, come in." So in we went, and him, smiling like fun, into the parlour, put the mistress run, quite shamed like, a whisking through the door, and dropping her things upon the floor, and the servant kicked o'er the landing top, a dirty trouse, with her head like a mop, and she gurned like a cat. But I didn't care, though they are middling spiteful, them creators are.